Station number 22121, Mill 2.
Mr. Scarfield, real tow. Who and what had hit your tank?
It was an 88mm armour-piercing shell from a Tiger tank.
Had you seen the Tiger?
No. It was in a wooded area.
And the other two tanks?
They survived that battle. In fact, they survived many a battle. And interestingly enough, to show how good these Churchills were, we finished on V-Day, the end of the war, up in Kiel on the Baltic, and we still had quite a number, quite a high proportion of our original tanks we went over the channel in.
Had you expected better things from this Sabot ammunition before you used it?
Yes, we had drawings of how successful the tests had been down at Lulworth and places like that. And we were confident that it would go through the front plate of these Tigers and Panthers and self-propelled guns, but no, I'm afraid it didn't. So that was disappointing. The trouble is that the tests done are done on the conditions where the shot is hitting the armour plate exactly head-on at 90 degrees, when, of course, any tank is always a bit of an angle, up, down, sideways, and shot goes off.
So was your Churchill hit in pursuing the enemy?
No, we were on Hill 309 and after the counterattack, and we were sitting there waiting orders what we were going to do, because the idea was that the Guards Armoured Division was going to go through and pursue, which it did to a certain degree, and then got held up. And then we had the Germans moved some of their forces from in front of Caen to their left to try and cut off this breakthrough, and they moved some of their crack troops. They were also worried because the Americans were breaking through and that they would get encircled below Caen by the American sweep. And the battles we then had at Lassy and Vassy, they're similar names, but a L and a V, were very nasty indeed, and a lot of casualties with the infantry, and quite a lot of tank casualties too.
Can you describe what happened to you personally at Lassy and Vassy?
We were supporting, I can't remember which company or brigade of the 15th Scottish Division, and whenever we poked our noses out, there were solid shot coming at us from Tigers or Panthers, concealed and camouflaged. The infantry tried to advance and found it quite impossible, and there was very little we could do to shoot them onto the objective. But we got there in the end, on both places. But it took several days of pretty sordid fighting.
Were these two separate battles, Lassy and Vassy?
One followed the other. Vassy, I think, was first, and Lassy was second. They were two villages very close to each other.
Was one battle worse than the other?
They were both equally sordid. And a lot of hand-to-hand fighting with the infantry.
What did you think of the performance of the infantry?
Well, I thought it was quite magnificent, but I felt I was glad to be in attack. Equally well, the infantry always used to say they much preferred to be on their feet when they saw tanks brewing up or exploding.
Did air power play any part in those battles?
Very little. I think we were too close to the enemy. They were bombing behind the German front line, but not too close because it was so difficult to know exactly which was friend and which was foe.
Was this also a bocage?
This was all bocage, yes.
So what was the outcome after the battles at the two?
Well, they eventually withdrew after two or three days, leaving a lot of casualties behind and quite a lot of armoured vehicles wrecked by our shooting. Then I think we had a rest for several days, and the Americans were advancing, and Caen had been taken, and the Falaise pocket, which destroyed most of the German army that was in that area. Then we had a long period, what was known in the doldrums, because the heavy tanks, whose main objective in life was to do a breakout, a set-piece attack, weren't, like cavalry, pursuing tanks. That was left to the armored division. Then we finished up on the Fleur to begin with, and then on the... We went on to the Seine when the Guards Armour Division was rushing for Brussels. And we did a lot of repair work on the tanks, more training, football matches, and that sort of thing.
What opinion had you formed of the German enemy from having fought them in Normandy?
Well, they were undoubtedly dedicated fighters. And if you met something like a SS battalion, they were very dogged, very dogged. I was also appalled at one moment. I can't actually remember where it was when we were in a village and the infantry had dug in round the outskirts and the German ambulance drove up, we thought, to collect wounded from the day before. Out jumped half a dozen men and with... machine guns, and killed a lot of a leading section of the infantry who were dug in on the edge of the village under the guise of Red Cross.
Did they escape?
Not one.
How were they dealt with? Who dealt with them?
The tanks.
Your tanks?
With the machine gun.
Was that your own personal tanks?
One was, yes.
What was the German policy about their dead and wounded on the battlefield? Was it the same as yours?
I can't honestly remember, but they carried off their wounded as best they could. We looked after their wounded, just like we hoped that they would look after any of our wounded. They were given even treatment with our own. And then I remember going for what we called a swan down to the place where what is the liqueur called? I can't remember.
Courvoisier?
No, not there.
Cointreau.
Cointreau was made, and the factory was still standing, and there was a Scottish manager who had been there throughout the whole of the war, being forced to turn out Cointreau for the German. And we were the first British he had seen. The Americans had taken the place. Angers, I think it is, where Kimmel. And I arrived there with a fellow officer in a scout car. And when we left, we found it laden with three cases of Cointreau, which I must say kept us going for a long time. And they were double-sized bottles at that. Then, do you want me to run on?
If you would, please.
Then we were told we were going to be moved on transporters up to the front, and I went ahead in a advance party into Brussels, which was still overjoyed with being liberated. So that was rather fun. Couldn't resist spending the night there.
What did the citizens do for you?
Well, they bottles, food and everything. It was fantastic. And where it all came from, I've no idea, but they seemed to have everything. And we went up into Holland. And, of course, at that time, the attempt on Arnhem was taking place. Sadly, didn't come off with the 6th Airborne Division. But Nijmegen was taken, so there was a finger salient into the German lines, with Germans either side of the salient. And we firstly went to tackle a small town called Overloom. And that was another fairly nasty battle, and there were an awful lot of mines there, and they were the Riegel, R-I-E-G-E-L, mines, which we hadn't met before. And they completely damaged even the underneath armoured plate of Churchill if it went over it, let alone blowing off the track. I'm afraid we lost quite a lot of tanks there, and quite a lot of people were either killed or wounded from these mines. And that battle raged for a couple of days. We then captured Overloom.
What kind of opposition did the Germans put up?
They put up strong opposition there, and strong opposition just south at a place called Venray. V-N-J-R-A-I, I think it's called. And that again was a tough battle with mine problems. And at that point, the adjutant of the battalion, Captain Ball Green, he went up on a mine. And the commanding officer sent for me in the evening and said, "I want you to be adjutant." I said, "I want to stay with my troops, sir." I was marched round a small field for about an hour, and then he said, "You will report at 0630 to my headquarters." So I was made adjutant.
So your protest didn't do any good?
The protest didn't do any good, no. Those two battles over and successful, We then went west again towards the pocket, or the salient, as you might call it, and liberated a town called Tilburg, a fairly big town.
What was the liberation of Tilburg like?
Liberation of Tilburg was fantastic. The population all turned out, and we had billets for the night. So the guardsmen and everybody were able to sleep in proper beds for the first time for a long while. But the noise going on, nobody got any sleep because of the revelry that went on all night. And then we had various, it's awfully difficult to remember, but various battles at that time, either side of the salient. And when we were pulled out of the line, we went to Helmond, which was a very nice little town and hadn't been badly damaged. And I can remember an amusing incident there. I was doing some billeting, going round houses saying, would you kindly have X number of guardsmen or whatever it was? And I, one rather nice Victorian house, I knocked on the door and a dear old lady answered it. Couldn't speak a word of English, and in the background I could see an extraordinarily attractive girl who spoke perfect English. So she came forward and I said to her, could they have a couple of people? And she said, yes, certainly. I said, there'll be two officers with you. One is me and the other will be the padre. And I got to know her really quite well when I used to come back on leave later on. I used to call in and see them. And the old girl was a baroness. But the battles went on and on in Holland for really quite a long time.
Why did you not want to do the job of adjutant?
Well, I'd been with my troop. I didn't not want to do it, couldn't put it like that, but I, having been with my troop with all the training in England through the Battle of Comor and the other Normandy battles, I had a great affection for those guardsmen. And I didn't want to leave them. And I hadn't had anybody wounded, let alone killed, up to that moment. We were considered, I think, a pretty good troop of tanks. And we had been the first to arrive on top of Hill 309.
What kind of work were you involved with as adjutant, apart from billeting?
Well, the job of adjutant is a complicated one, but a very, very busy one. You've got an awful lot of administration to cope with, supplies and all that sort of thing, and what the quartermaster was bring up and so on, tank reports back to linked to brigade headquarters, keeping them informed of everything, planning the operation with the commanding officer, drawing up orders, movement orders, highly complicated, and an awful lot of movement at that time when you move a battalion of Churchill tanks, 64 tanks, plus all the vehicles that go with it, A echelon, B echelon, C echelon, lorries, three tonners with all the supplies and so on. But the most interesting thing was planning an operation and then being with it, because the commanding officer and I were nearly always forward with the leading squadron to see what was going on and change the plan if necessary.
What's the difference between the B echelon and C echelon?
Well, one is further back than the other. And we then were trying to clear all German troops from west of the Rhine, and the Americans were trying to do the same further down. And then we went up at one time to take Cleve, where Anne of Cleves comes from, or came from. And the Germans opened the dikes and the dams, and we had about 14 inches of flood to cope with. So that wasn't very pleasant, but we got Cleve in the end. Then turned south again, mopping up countless engagements, mopping up west of the Rhine when needed. Then we pulled out of the line, and the Ardennes offensive took place, and that got very complicated, and I think the high command got fairly nervous. The Germans penetrated about 35 miles and took about 20,000 American prisoners. They also shot some, and that news got around very quickly. And we were on the northern side of that. And poised to pinch the bulge. Patton was coming in from the south, and the Americans were holding out at Bastogne, I think was the name of the place. And the weather to begin with was awful, and the aircraft couldn't fly because they couldn't see a thing. And then when the weather cleared, scores and scores of aircraft, fighters and fighter bombers came in, and they did a tremendous amount of damage to the Germans. And eventually, Patton relieved Bastogne, and we pushed in from the north. And the Battle of the Bulge was won by us.
What were your main problems of doing the adjutant's job during the Ardennes offensive and so on?
Movement. We came under command three different armies in 24 hours. When I say we came under command, because the situation was so volatile, high command didn't quite know what to do next. So we were switched from American army to back to 21st Army Group, Montgomery. So orders had to be prepared, just fight in the end having to be torn up. And so on to the Rhine, and this was most exciting. We went over Wesel on the first bridge that could take Churchill tanks, 40-ton tanks. The American 17th Airborne Division had dropped the other side, and the British 6th Airborne Division had dropped two, and our job on going over the bridge was to link up with the Americans, paratroopers. We'd seen them all come in the day before, and there were hundreds and thousands of aircraft and gliders. And we duly linked up with them, and our objective was to get to Munster, 50 miles in, as quickly as we could. And the Americans sat on our tanks, and whenever we ran into any trouble, they'd jump off and act as infantry. And they were their elite troops. And by Jove, they were good too, because we ran into trouble every now and again, village after village we went through. It took us 5 days, 6 days, to get to Munster. Then the battalion was in the lead to the heart of Germany.
What condition was Munster in?
Munster wasn't too badly damaged. The railway yard was been heavily bombed, and it wasn't too bad.
Was there any sign by now of enemy opposition crumbling?
Yes, signs of crumbling now, and villages all had white sheets out of their windows as you went through. Surrender, surrender, but there were still groups who were determined to defend their fatherland, as you might call it, and particularly some of the young cadets and those sort of people who were avid Nazis. And one amusing thing happened in Munster, which I must tell you about. The commanding officer and I were having a chat in the middle of the town, what we were going to do next. We'd gone so fast, we got out of touch with brigade headquarters at one time. But anyhow, we determined to continue, regardless of that. And 100 yards away, there were about 15 Germans in uniform approaching us with their hands up. And they got closer and closer, and I said, halt, 10 yards away. And they all went down on their knees. So we tell them to get up. And we had an interpreter with us, a Dutchman, who we picked up in Holland, a wonderful chap. They were postmen in uniform, German postmen who all wore uniform, who had been told, and they believed it, by Goebbels' propaganda, that anybody in uniform would be shot by the Americans and the British. So we told them to go home.
Did they keep their uniforms on?
Oh yes, hold on. So we enlightened them that we weren't going to shoot them, nor were we going to do anything to them. They could go home. They wouldn't have any posts for a bit.
What was their demeanour?
Oh, one of fright and terror. And then it was pursuit to the Elbe. Again, we joined up, having the Americans left us at Munster, and they had been absolutely marvellous. And we had trouble at Celle on the way to the Elbe, and Ulzen were quite nasty times, and a lot of craters in roads and blown up bridges wherever we went. We overtook her in Celle, I think it was, a concentration camp. It was only 12 miles from Belsen, but we overtook found a concentration camp in Celle, which also had hospitals in it, German hospitals. And the sights were unbelievable. There were people that had their thumbs screwed off, had been scalped. It was really unbelievable. You just couldn't understand how Germans, who were meant to be civilized, could do these awful things to these people. And we turned out the Bürgermeister, or whatever he's called, and said that all these people have got to go straight into hospital, and all your senior citizens have got to look after them. And if you don't obey that order, you'll be in trouble. And then what happened to them when... I don't know, because we went on.
Were these both men and women?
Both men and women, yes. Horrible sights, really horrible. You couldn't believe people could do these things.
Were you able to speak to them?
They were hardly capable of speech. They were so weak. But it made one more determined to eradicate Nazism from the face of the earth. and an awful lot of Germans who pretended they knew nothing about the concentration camps. Of course, they did. And then we went on to the Elbe. I had a week's leave at that moment and went back to England, flew back, came back in again.